So I'm here at the outside the agenda meeting and talking to a couple of folks. I have a very nice sign here. It's in large red letters. It says, "No recall, preserve diverse voices and community values." With some roses. It's pleasant. And we're talking with
Lee Brokaw.
And Lee, you have in your hand and are clutching tightly to your chest a rather full binder, which has, what, the Rose Report?
Interestingly enough, with the rose on the sign, I have the Rose Report.
I see. But everything is not rosy in Santa Cruz.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. So you're going to be going through this report. You already have, I see, some marks in it. Hey, Drew.
Hey, Drew. For your viewing pleasure. Oh, hey, wow, look at that.
Drew, bring some agendas if you can.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, beautiful.
So, and you pulled a couple of items out of the Rose Report that were specific. I don't think we have time now because we're about to go into the agenda examination meeting. At least that's what it looks like is happening.
That's from the workplace. From the workplace policy.
Mm-hmm. Just coming up on Tuesday night.
Yes. And this is from the manual that is put out for all city employees and council members. And it defines conduct. And one of the things that it says with respect to listing disrespectful conduct is that a single act shall not constitute disrespectful conduct unless especially severe or egregious, like a laugh.
That's page 2-1B. And of course, a laugh was what Councilmember Crone was accused of offending
the mayor,
Councilmember Watkins, about, and was the basis for the, what, $18,000 report?
Yes. And the responsibilities listed in part 2 for council members they are required to behave respectfully and refrain from disrespectful behaviors and are expected to, bullet point 4, address, if possible, inappropriate behavior directly with a person engaging in such conduct in a professional and non-confrontatory manner, as opposed to the mayor, who did it publicly from the dais, presumably giving her more credibility because her words did not have credibility.
Well, when you speak from a position of authority, it tends to have people listen, even if they are a little bit intimidated.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about this. We've been talking with
Lee Brokaw.
And where can people find this report? Is it online?
It's online. Absolutely online.
And you'll be giving a link to this particular section at some point?
Yes. I think that might be my oral communications. Or it might be my communications when they bring up censorship.
Or perhaps just online so that you can...
Oh, I do it online. For sure.
Good.
I think maybe this thing deserves a seat of its own.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh.
Totally.
Nah, I don't want to stretch it.
You can hang it from the ceiling.
Yeah, so it's good for tabling, that's for sure. Preserve diverse voices, community values.
That door won't lock.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll put it here so everybody can see it when they walk in. Maybe the mayor will walk
in. Yes,
see it. Climate action going on down at Loudoun.
Yeah, I got my team, one of my guys over there right now for Project Pollinate. So, this. I know Daryl is planning on coming, and
I think Alicia's coming.
Yeah, I saw Alicia outside, but Ed said maybe.
We got that small controller in front of you.
The what? This? This?
Yeah,
okay.
Problem solver, Lee. There we go.
Now we're talking.
Is it going to fall?
It just
do you have it
there,
anchored?
No, you need
Wait.
A spray paint, I think.
Is it anchored up there or just sitting?
No.
Okay.
It's a little crooked, unfortunately, but I'm not going to try and change it. I want to get a little glare off the back of this chrome head here.
Yeah.
A picture of that all in one.
No.
Maybe you need to stand there. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll do it outside.
Okay.
Before we leave for the day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I got the back of the head and the ears.
They're definitely pronounced, that's for sure.
They're really cute.
room.
Now, do you guys get to vote on this censor resolution? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I was thinking
you
were opposed. If
you were going to be excluded from, I didn't know, so that was a question.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I would imagine we get to vote on it, but...
to censor yourself, probably.
Yeah, whether or not to censor us, because if not, then they have us outnumbered if we can't vote on it. But
right.
Let's find out right now, actually.
Oh, do you have something?
Hello, this is Drew. You are not the city attorney. You're absolutely correct. Hey, that's always a good thing to potentially do. So, what's going on? Oh yeah, well,
this is kind of thin.
I'm having my twice monthly agenda review session right now at City Hall in the conference room. Yeah, but I can give you a call later or something. We can touch base. Oh, thank you.
You know, you've pulled out some really important pieces in the report.
Yeah.
They're probably figuring no one's going to read it.
At 2 minutes is a shot. I can't read the whole thing.
No,
but I'm doing it. Did you read my...
you still banned?
Oh, I didn't bring it. I emailed out what I was going to...
No one enforces it and no employee has to
read about him, but now that I'm reading that part of the manual, that's very appropriate to be read. During the
hey, John and Drew. Hey, quick question. That censorship vote. Is there anyone that's ineligible for voting on that? That's a good. That means sure. Sure. Yeah. I didn't think so either. I just wanted to double check with you.
Oh, so they are not going to agree to attend meetings.
Oh, really? Okay.
What are you looking at? Oh, the infamous resolution.
Oh, and there's some sections of the workplace procedures that they want to talk about. I got to read those to be ready to talk about those.
Wonderful. Thank you for the clarification.
Did you find any candy?
Right, that was my inclination as well.
Did you find any candy?
Oh, I'll dig more deep.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much, Kevin. So, according to him, yes, I need to go around.
Good.
You do.
Okay, oh, again.
He said the president is Micah Posner voting to censure himself, which took place last time when Michael was on the council. So,
did vote.
And then he also mentioned that.
Okay.
If that were the case, then other council members could vote and certain ones couldn't. That would be fair and all this other kind of stuff. So, good stuff.
Okay.
Stare decisis.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everyone knows that the meeting is being audio recorded. There's no problem with it on my end, but just so everyone knows. Were you going to say something to me? You were saying something like
that. I just said stare decisis.
What? I don't know.
Well, that's Supreme Court. It has been decided.
Okay. So normally the way that we do it is we walk through, if there's anything in particular you want to talk about a closed session, but I can't share anything with you, you let me know of things you might want me to ask, but then I can't report back to you. There's the consent agenda after the presentations, and then we get into the general business, which has cannabis consumption on site and some other stuff, as well as the, with like the license changes and partnerships, charter amendment for school districts with regards to Article 416, and then the syringe conversation as proposed by, I believe, Myers and Matthews. And then the 7 o'clock one. I don't think we'll spend very much time on this. If you want to meet with me afterwards, we can talk about, and not today, but sometime between now and Tuesday, we can talk about potential approaches to the censorship question and the investigation recommendations. I don't think we'll have a lot of time to talk about it, at least in the depth that it deserves. I have started preparing a response and a perspective to approach it by, or from, I should say, at the meeting. I can fill anyone in on that later. So, anything anyone wants to tell me about the closed session things? Otherwise, we can just transition directly into the 1 o'clock.
Okay. Have you looked at the one litigation claim, the $1,275 for property damage? That's Louis Anthony Picarte.
Yeah.
I requested today the unredacted claim so that I can see what he actually was saying. On words, or if he has an attorney, to check out, and also his contact information, so if he wants people to come speak up for him or something, that can be done. I would request that you put in a, you make a formal request of that information, I told this before, be put on the agenda initially, the unredacted claim, since they're public records, since I continually ask for them and get them. Bonnie is quite speedy in doing that. But why should she have to make a particular effort to do it when it could simply be put up on the agenda along with the recognition of the panel? It doesn't really matter much because, of course, they turn down these claims. But if we are pretending to be a democracy here and open to the public and accessible, that's what you want. If you want to have people knowing what they're. Whether they should say something 2 minutes right before the closed session starts. And it does concern often the police department. This is also one avenue that homeless people have. It's necessary before a lawsuit, which, as you know, can be important.
Right. Okay, definitely, and noted. Thank you. I will try and have that conversation and potentially make a motion.
When would that motion be?
It would be made in closed session, probably. And then if not, then we would do an agenda item to talk about litigation information being released to the public. And
now, you've been reluctant to do anything in that section.
No, I said I haven't wanted to use the calendar review portion to force things on the agenda, but I do want to write agenda reports and submit them, because then if they're not accepted, then go through.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You
right.
Don't want to use that session. So, are you going to continue to essentially leave it in Watkins' hands until?
Unless you want to work with me to write an agenda, this is the same offer I make you every time. I said, if you want to work with me to develop an agenda report that I can submit this Thursday, then it will be submitted and be done. But I am pulled in so many directions that even in writing or preparing an agenda report for anything additional is an extra tax.
But I'm
not
talking
time.
About that. I'm talking about bringing it up. At that point, and you can set the council.
And what have I told you in the past about bringing things up at that point?
Well, what I'm saying to you is, you said occasionally, you said you wanted to do it initially, do it through an agenda request, and then.
If it doesn't get accepted, then I will use that tool that's on the agenda to make a motion to try to clear
up. Saying, just generally, as a matter of course, you're not going to bring things up unless you first submit them to what?
An attempt to try to get them on the agenda the way that they have requested it to go.
Does this include old stuff that you attempted to get on the agenda and she sidelined?
Like what?
Well, what I'm really thinking of most recently was this infraction data that you, and the report
closed session stuff.
It wasn't requested in open session. It was requested in open session.
Right, and it was presented to us in closed session because of the
so
issues.
I would ask that you request as an agenda item to be brought into open session because that's where it started. Otherwise, you're allowing yourself to be intimidated and bullied by the city attorney.
So if you're interested in working with me on developing an agenda report to submit to formally request that it be put on the agenda, and then if it doesn't, we can work on forcing it on the agenda, then I'm happy to work with you on that.
Well, you won't do that directly, even if it's been a prior item, that's what you're saying. Okay.
Correct. Wonderful. Other closed session things? Okay. Is there anything that sticks out to you in the consent agendas or anything else? There's minutes, there's Clean Air Day, there's the shared metropolitan record system, liability claims, Santa Cruz firefighters tentative agreement through HR, the intersection improvements at River Street, authorizing the reconciliation of acquisition agreements and approved by city attorney for purchase of real estate things. Award contract for screen conveyor rebuild for the wastewater treatment facility. Award contract for master service agreements for California.
Number nine.
Okay.
Oh, that's the one in nine.
So this one is the recommendation to authorize the thing for the highway improvements with the right. So this is acquiring certain easements or something?
It's the Ross Camp, isn't it?
No.
It's not, that's what I was wondering.
So this is for, if you want to see up here on the screen, this is the, I don't know why they have this like highlighted hand-drawn, the one they show us is much nicer, but this area in the pink and the blue is currently owned by the Gateway Plaza, I believe, or some different owners. And so the city is purchasing these highlighted tracts of land for the expansion of this intersection.
Where is this on the edge of the...
Is that where people are camping right now?
No.
No? Are you sure that's not to the right there where people are currently camping as they're coming down towards River?
This is the freeway. This is where the Ross Camp was.
Right, as you're coming down.
This is the
down.
Ross facility. This is the like Sawyer Chiropractic and the entrance off River Street right here. And so this is the fence to the Ross Camp right here.
Right, people are camping now down the way across the freeway on the other side.
Yeah, this isn't on the other side. We're talking right here. This is like Xfinity and GNC and... You know, all that other kind of stuff. And so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so no.
Oh, the area up closer to the freeway.
Yeah, I'm sure
it is. Myers complained against me. Look how angry. She just went in ballistic.
This isn't the original, is it?
It's copy.
Okay, because this is blue.
Gateway Plaza. Okay. So it's this area,
so that's
right?
Not thoughtful. That's hysterical.
Here.
That's the point I want to make.
So the Ross Camp was here. They're acquiring this area here.
Okay. Where I'm talking about is across the street on the left where it says, see where it says hot springs thing on the corner? That hot springs, like pool spot?
Hot springs.
It's
here.
Put your arrow down a little bit from where you are right now. On the corner, down a little more. Right there. Hot Springs Plaza on the side of the freeway right there in that general area.
That's
there's
not,
a bunch of people camping.
That's not where it is right here.
Okay.
So that is to acquire those properties for these values right here for a total of, I think, somewhere around $200,000.
Gosh, one of them is really cheap.
And stuff. Yeah, it's really small. Hey, Scott.
Hi. To me, this whole thing needs to come to a screeching halt, because all this is this pre-planning for the bridge widening, which this particular council doesn't want to do. And so they're just going to do all the prep work for the bridge widening till they get a council that will approve it. So you guys are, if you approve this, you're approving the bridge widening in the future.
I
want to say more about that?
Well, that's what this is. It's a precursor to bridge widening.
But you don't want bridge widening.
I don't. I mean, why should we spend a bunch of money widening the bridge when all projections are within the next 10 or 20 years, the number of cars on the road are going to go down, not up? It's just like this insane thing they're doing on Highway 1. It's like,
Lee, would you like the bridge to be widened?
Well, when I drive through there, it's a mess. Mm-hmm. And if it were easier to drive through there for right now, mm-hmm. in the moment, in the now,
right.
I would like to be able to get through that intersection more easily.
Does widened mean another lane or wider?
Both.
Yeah, both.
So they want to really soup up, I mean, they've showed the picture before, but they have this whole grand vision for that intersection where to make it wider and broader. And
yeah, they want to have like a bridge with four lanes in each direction.
Well, that's the main way in, so I don't see that's a horrible idea, but right now it's kind of a mess.
Because mm-hmm. in the future we won't need it. It's only a temporary fix for the number of cars on the road now. The number of cars on the road future, which is the people that will be paying for it, is in the future.
How do we know that the number of cars in the future will be declining?
Because that's the trend right now. And a lot of the millennials aren't buying cars. I was just over at Loud Nelson across from my house, and there's the people giving speeches telling the kids, don't ask your parents for a car, don't get a car, you don't need a car.
Right. Okay, so different perspectives here. I like it, and that's one of the reasons why I have these meetings.
Yeah. I'm just asking because I'm not familiar with this issue, but is this one the one that Rick Longinetti has issue with too?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, because I remember him talking about it as well.
They will use the recent issue with the gravel truck that lost its brakes and then careened into those cars and the big fiery mess that the people from the camp had to run over and rescue people out of the flaming cars. They'll use that as a reasoning to widen the bridge for safety to prevent that kind of a backup from occurring at that intersection, which is an understandable and valid concern.
Yeah.
Want to see the bridge widening to
What they need to do is the same thing they do in Germany, which is ban big rigs from the road during rush hour. You have no big rigs on the road during rush hour, just cars.
Can you do that in the city? Can you propose such
a thing? That's what I'm running on, but ban big rigs on roads during rush hour.
That's an alternative.
That's difficult on a state
highway. Is that feasible?
I don't think the city can do that.
I mean, we're a consumer economy.
Yeah, they're not in Germany.
Hmm?
Germany's got a higher standard of living than we do, so it means they consume more than we do.
So, all good questions. I'll make sure to try and get some answers to these before Tuesday, and then potentially work them into the statements. Is there any other documents? The site map, the resolution, and then the agenda report. So, properties acquisition phase funded by traffic impact fees. There's no impact to the general fund. So, okay, well, good questions. Thank you for your different perspectives on the issue of bridge widening. We have the contract for the conveyor rebuild of the wastewater treatment facility. The award master service agreement for California Environmental Quality Act compliance and environmental permitting services. Execute master service agreement.
So the wastewater, you're going to go with that?
Well, we have a water system that has a lot of capital improvements that need to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we
this
do.
This one is.
I just went and toured it, so.
Yeah.
It's. Really, if you haven't gone, you should check it out. I mean, it's
she's
big and intense.
She's been talking about doing a wastewater tour or water tour in general.
Well, this one
I got to see the one in Watsonville, so I went out there and saw it there.
Yeah.
I have a follow-up from the last council meeting. You asked to get the presentation on the curfew prior to the meeting, and when I asked you at the meeting, whether you'd gotten it, he said no. You hadn't been able to get it from the police department. Did you get any response from the city manager?
Presentation?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, the presentation that they gave to the city on curfew, but did not put into the
Oh, you want the physical one? No, I have not received that yet, but I'll put another reminder for it, so ask.
Did you get it beforehand? You obviously
no.
Didn't. Did you get any response from them when you asked for it?
I don't remember. I don't think so. Ask for a copy of a presentation from police for the beach curfew from last.
I mean, the point is, are you getting what you're requesting? Because obviously the community is. We didn't know what to expect from that. They just blindsided everybody with their presentation. You made it a point you were going to ask and hopefully get something by Monday.
Right, and I have, to my knowledge, I haven't received it, but I also submitted a request for a bunch of different dates associated with the rocks encampment and the timeline of what's been going on over the last couple of months, and that was on Tuesday, and it's Friday, and I haven't received it.
Can we get a copy of your request?
If I can find it in my email, sure.
Because I think it's important to document the kinds of requests you're making of staff and not getting a response from
them. Yeah, I think that's important.
Okay, thank you.
And along with that same line, did you get any kind of map about the main beach where the mean high tide line is on the main beach?
No, I asked for it before the meeting and
during the meeting?
And during the meeting, but at the meeting, even I referenced it to the Parks and Rec director. I was like, I asked you for a map, understand where it was, and he's like, yeah, well, we went off the GIS data and all that kind of stuff, so no, I did not receive that either.
Yeah, because I was looking on the Coastal Commission's website, and the maps they have are so bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you can't tell anything from their maps.
Yeah, it was when I was trying to do the research, it was really hard too, but
I think a spreadsheet of the name of the request, the date the request was made, the date you received a reply, and if it's still open, there should be like highlighted in yellow or something like that so that you can graphically put that up and say, look, this is how I have been trying to work with staff and I'm getting absolutely no respect, no replies. Because I'm suspecting that Bernal is telling all of them, if you don't get a request from me about what Drew wants, don't reply to it. And the graphics of a spreadsheet, it's dramatic, pretty dramatic.
And even about assigning motive, it's important to have a documentary history of it. So you can say, well, there might be some other reason, the staff might need some assistance from my intern, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, just another administrative thing we do. But I hear it, and it definitely is valuable, and I will work to keep that record.
Maybe you can just CC a copy to Lee and to me when you send it off to.
CC a copy to Lee/Robert. Okay, good suggestions all around. Love having you all here to give me this brain juice. Okie dokie. So now we can keep moving right along. Water main replacement on 7th Avenue. We have the lock recreation area upper, accessibility improvements, and then that ends the consent agenda with 1 hour left in our meeting. So there is the ordinance for the enterprise revenue bond law, health and sanitation of Title 16 water sewers and other public services on the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. Introduce for publication ordinances adding chapter 613, title 6, and chapter 1626. Constitution states the.
Speeds it up. Sounds like Trump, didn't you?
basically a state mandated change.
Yeah. Okay. So I need to check with him if there's any specific questions that come up after you review it. There's the cannabis consumption lounges, license transfer restrictions, hours of operations, temporary events, and ordinance revisioning, removing requirements for new cannabis retail license and management changes.
It would be nice to add something like, you know, Nate is always asking at oral communication, which essentially allows for consumption of cannabis.
Well, that's what the lounges are.
Yeah.
But is it, is that in fact provided for here? Does it change city law?
Yeah. It
does.
It's the proposed amendments to the commercial, medical, and adult use cannabis regulations that allow cannabis consumption lounges.
Now, I would hope that this would be in line with what's happening in Holland, you know. You go to Amsterdam, you can go into a cafe, sit there and smoke hash or marijuana, and usually there's a guy in the corner selling it. But this thing says you can't sell it where you're consuming it, so that would kind of derail that whole thing. But, you know, I think that, you know, local cafes should be allowed to do it. Now, in Holland, different cities have different laws. Most of them, you can't have alcohol and marijuana in the same building or the same establishment, except in Rotterdam. Rotterdam allows marijuana and alcohol to mix.
I'm not going to ask you how you know that.
Because I've been there.
Oh, yeah, me too. Have you been to Paradiso? Good times, good times. Mm. Everybody's got a table, you know? Got various different kinds of hashes, different kinds of
alcohol. Well, see, I had a girlfriend that lived in Germany, and her parents lived, like, right across the border from Maastricht. And there, they had this cafe called the Easy Going, a cafe juice bar. You go there, and this guy was just sitting in the corner. He had a big box full of hash and marijuana.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the river there, there's these barges.
Oh, yeah, that's where,
any of the barges that had marijuana.
My hash is off the barges.
Yeah, and they both basically only sold large quantities. Mm-hmm. But you could ask them for a sample pack where they give you like 3 grams of each kind of stuff they had, and it'd be like $70 for it'd be about an ounce, a mixture of things. And that was the way to buy a small amount instead of buying kilos.
Yeah, I bought kilos.
Yeah.
That was
a dope deal.
That's
on the consumption report back in September.
Okay.
So I was having a discussion with the advanced work plan to move forward.
And is there an actual, there's an actual specification and the actual resolution, I guess, is the issue.
Ordinance.
And do they have that in San Francisco?
What? Well, they used, I don't know. I mean, it used to be like when they first started the medical marijuana thing in San Francisco, you could consume it in the place. You know, they had the couches and stuff, and you could just sit there and get high. I don't know if presently they allow it or not.
Yeah, so this is the...
What about the previous document that I have? Right after the staff reports.
Is it just the green card?
So it doesn't have anything to do with allowing consumption, does it?
Yes, those remember. The lounges are...
Yeah, yeah, but what he's saying is in the actual resolution language.
Sure, it's nothing really. That's what changes it. Just seems like language.
That's not what it says, yeah.
At least I haven't been able to see that.
Yeah, this one's specifically about the management transfers.
Right.
Some best you can get.
The agenda report talks about making a motion to propose amendments to the commercial, medical, and adult use cannabis regulations to include consumption lines. So this is to have a conversation about giving staff instruction based off of the report they're probably going to give us from their research about potential ways to go forward with creating amendments to allow for consumption
methods.
So this is the first of 3 steps.
So you should tell them to do some research in Holland, and you'll you'll take us all there to do the research.
Okay. You volunteer?
We want real
What do you
data.
Think about that? Do you think that
real
is something
data.
The community would support? I mean, I'm just...
There's a lot of support from the cannabis community for it.
Sure.
And who submitted this? Justin's been really involved in this.
Okay.
The people. So, yeah, I mean, I don't see, is anyone against the idea of having consumption lounges?
I'm sure there's a lot of right-wing Christians out there that are against it.
I'd imagine so, too.
I'm still adjusting to the fact that it's legal.
Right.
And I'm a retired second-grade teacher, so, I'm still adjusting to this. So, but, of course, it would be 21-year-olds, and if you have bars, I mean,
It's less dangerous.
It's less dangerous.
Substance than alcohol.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
You get five people drinking, and they start fighting.
Yes.
You get five guys smoking marijuana, they start a band.
is it consumption, smoking, or eating?
I think it's just consumption cannabis. So I would imagine it's all of it.
So they're serving liquor at the hair salons around here.
Well,
so
I mean, just the smoke in the air.
Not where I go.
Don't really want it.
Interesting.
Well,
would it be a separate place? Like, not that I want to continue this conversation. Like, there's other stuff to talk about.
State law provides the local jurisdiction to allow commercial on-site consumption as long as the access to the area of consumption is restricted to 21 and over. Consumption is not visible from the public.
Mm.
The sale or consumption of alcohol or tobacco is not allowed on the premises. Smoking cannabis or cannabis products is prohibited in the location where smoking tobacco is prohibited, and all other health and safety regulations also apply.
It's really like a cannabis flowers.
So several
right.
communities, okay,
sorry,
there is on-site.
One at a time. I think we were going at the same time.
Right? Can't be a bar. Can't sell alcohol.
Can't sell alcohol, no. And since you can't smoke tobacco in establishments, I would imagine, unless it's an outdoor ventilated space, you can't smoke tobacco? Or can't smoke? I'm not sure. So what about people that are sensitive to smoke?
Well, I'd say would it be a shared business, like a business that's next to another business? That might be an issue. And maybe it would have to be a standalone business.
Well, that's what they're saying. It's like a cafe.
But we have like so many businesses schmooze right next to each other that might bother other businesses if it wasn't its own building.
It's true. Don't pee on my shoes.
Yes, don't schmooze on my business. What if I'm serving ice cream to kids? I don't want your cannabis.
I just don't want it.
The questionable slash controversial thing on here is the license transfers. Because the original design was that you couldn't transfer the license to anyone else without them having to reapply for a license, mm-hmm. which specifically Khalil, the owner of Kind Peoples, is incredibly against. He says it's hard to bring in new capital from partners in the business because you can't share the license
mm-hmm.
and all this other kind of stuff. But it was designed to keep big cannabis from coming in and buying out local retailers and transitioning or shifting the license. So Khalil really wants us to lift that restriction.
They'll take over everything.
Can we modify
well,
it for
then
him?
Well, Barbara will come in and buy all the cannabis shops.
Yeah.
See, however, that the change of a non-member on-site manager with less than 20% ownership interest in a cannabis retail business shall not be considered a change. So this makes it so that someone can come and buy into the business, but no more than 20%. And then, that infuses capital into the business with new investors, but doesn't give them control over the business from the original licensee.
I'm sorry to interrupt. If you can share your license with anybody, there's really no cap on that 20%, because every time you bring another person in, that 20% gets bigger and bigger. They're unstoppable at that point.
Unstoppable.
They'll monopolize. That's why he wants it.
What do the other cannabis people say about this? Have you talked to
them? Yeah, haven't really reached out to me, but here's the correspondence.
There's a definite reason why you cannot share your license with anybody underneath you. It's not an umbrella license.
What about co-op?
Functionally, our role is about raising money through equity in the business, appointing advisors and board members to maximize the business operations and involve the community. Be allowed to sell or bequeath their hard-earned legacy in that language.
Again, can I just say, license, like businesses are transfer, he could essentially transfer the business, yes, but then his child would have to apply for their own license. And licenses in anything are not just given, like if I have a beauty salon business, I cannot just give that to my child. They have to be and go and get their own license to practice in a salon, in a chiropractic office. These are specialized things, so I cannot just give a special license away because I die. I can give my business away, but they have to apply for their own license. So there's my argument for, what's his name, Khalil?
Khalil.
Khalil, yes. You can give your business away, but your child needs to get his own license. Just like if a doctor dies, his, I'm sorry, but he can't just give his license to practice medicine to his child.
He might be able to give the practice, though.
If the,
yes, but if his child's a doctor, if he's not a doctor, tough, what, you know.
No, but if he has an office and he has other doctors working.
You can bring in another licensed professional to take over the business. That's an option.
Yeah, and then the kids still own the business.
Yeah,
can I ask a question? Quick question. If the issue is not big business coming in, what about saying the person has to be a Santa Cruz resident or something?
Yeah, I think it prioritizes local businesses already.
Okay, sorry.
But good.
But look at, I would say to look at how somebody that had a liquor store, whether their kids could just directly inherit the liquor store, or would they have to go?
No, because they can't pass down a liquor license. They would get the liquor. They have to apply for their own liquor license.
Well, I don't know that.
You can't pass down a contractor's license.
No, you cannot pass down a contractor's license.
You can't pass down a contractor's license?
Teaching credential can't be passed down.
Right. So their request was to have the language say no more than 51%. It looks like the city came back and did no less than 20% of ownership interest. So at least there's some kind of check there. There, applications include background checks, so it's only one thing. So that's the only correspondence that we've gotten so far from their people. So the questions I have to send to planning and other stuff is, what about people sensitive to smoke and consuming non-smokable items? And then what is there to prevent monopolies if there is a continual buying of 20% over time as it impacts the overall ownership of the business? And what other issues allow licenses to be transferred just on the fact of the relationship?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Alicia also said that the siting of the particular business, you know, would you have some language around, like you were using the example?
Shared building.
Or, you know, could it be next door to an ice cream park?
Right.
Was your example. So I remember you saying that.
Yeah. I'm just concerned to prevent future problems. If it was in its own location, it would be less of an issue.
Could a 7-Eleven be next to an ice cream parlor? They sell beer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
they don't
consume
it.
Joints, probably
they're
not
consuming.
Well, they don't allow cannabis clubs right next to those type of establishments either.
I mean, that's ridiculous. What the hell is the whole thing about cannabis?
No, I agree with you.
Well, that's what we're trying to move to what we want.
Number 15.
Crazed, you know, paranoia of the moment is.
Cannabis.
And I don't want to spend too much time on the side because then they're like, you want to put homeless cannabis 25 feet from residential lines. So what are you talking about? Weed smoke. Okay.
Let's go.
And
well, usually, you know, alcohol outlets have drunks standing around outside of them.
That is true, and lots of cigarette smoke.
Yes.
Can some homeless people stay at the lounges, like overnight?
Will there be overnight options? Maybe they'll do things like the boardwalk, where people can pay to sleep on the floor. Okay, so monthly updates on the general plan and zoning ordinance reconciliation effort of the city's corridors. the report. So that, well, I'm glad that's on there because that'll give me the chance to make sure that the perception from people that are they just hate me already, are that you know, we don't care about affordable housing because we killed the corridors plan. My response is that it's not that we should throw everything out, it's that we should reevaluate it with input from different groups and then come back with a more holistic and more broad approach towards community outreach and engagement in the corridor development.
Yeah, and really the corridor plan was not going to be for really affordable housing.
Right.
It was going to be for market rate. And as an example, the 1024 project on Soquel, that John Swift's project, there's one affordable, so it's the inclusionary. He's using the inclusionary, which is fine. But out of, I think there was 10 units, one was, or 12 units, and one was affordable. So we would have more of the same. It would not really, the way it was written, it wouldn't really really be designed necessarily for the affordable housing that this community needs. So yes, more needs to be done on that.
And then it's, what is the definition of an affordable in those units?
Well, that's the other thing you have to talk about.
Right, and that opens up the conversation of in-lieu fees, which is a whole other topic, because I personally want to increase in-lieu fees to make it not economically feasible for a developer to not build affordable units.
Exactly.
So
we kind of have a guideline, though.
Right.
We
exactly.
sort of have a guideline. It's if you're paying over 30% of your income on rent,
then your rent. Technically, you're not affordable.
Right.
50% rent.
But some of the developers will say, oh, well, they'll do the 80%. So a person, oh, I'll get an affordable unit, and you can make up to $107,000 a year.
Right.
And they're calling that affordable.
Right.
That
right.
is not affordable for this community.
Look at the
yes,
fact
it's
that
like affordable to who?
I read something else that 80% of our jobs here and available jobs are service jobs that pay under $15
right.
an hour. So I think that should be calculated in that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we have to look at, and they look at the county. I'm wondering, why can't we look at the city? We make on an average $20,000 less a year than the county, and so really our affordable units should be I don't know.
Because I look
you
at
know,
somebody who has over $50,000
a year, and
options.
Below. That kind of thing, because if it's 63,000, so maybe 48, 50, and below for affordable. But anyway, I mean, I'm just throwing that out. But truly affordable housing,
right.
not
yes.
this faux stuff.
Totally agree. Jane?
Now, you were just going past that who's going to be on this committee.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird. So
two
you get
from the corridor
up to six people from Save Santa Cruz. Is Save Santa Cruz a Branson 40 group?
No.
So who?
Not
are
necessarily.
They?
Well,
are they pro recall people?
No.
I don't know that. The point is, does everybody else feel okay about this thing? It doesn't look good to me.
Okay, so I was in Save Santa Cruz, and I'm also currently in the Branson 40 Action Committee. And Save.
Can't quite hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
I was a member of Save Santa Cruz, and I am a member of Branson 40 Action Committee. And but I don't see our group name up there. It's BAC,
that.
And this is a staff report, of course.
Did you receive an invitation?
No, did not. Mm-hmm. I didn't, but I'm not currently a member of Save Santa Cruz. But there are back people that are in both groups, and I used to be in both groups.
The direction from the last city council was to engage with local communities and Save Santa Cruz, I think. So we specifically stated Save Santa Cruz in it, and then other community organizations, I think, was the language. And
right.
so from that, this is the group, and those were sent out on the 16th of September.
Why Save Santa Cruz?
Because they were some of the most vocal, and I guess with regards to the corridors issue, and worked with Councilmember Brown on the agenda item and the motion.
What is CAC?
Community or Corridor Advisory Committee, and I don't know who's on that.
Oh, well, there were 16 members originally on that, and the city council people were Rochelle Naroyan and Cynthia Matthews, and then there were a bunch of developers and other people from the community, but not one East Side person was, neighbor was on it. We were excluded, and we had no voice. So, but I would say, I would add the Brazos 40 Action Committee. It doesn't have to be me. I mean, a couple of people from back would be good.
Frederick Street Irregulars?
I mean, we're actually the people who started it in 2015. And then later, Save Santa Cruz got involved in 2017. And that's great. They've done some really good work.
Okay. I'll be cross-checking Save Santa Cruz with a couple other groups and see if they share members. And then if that is the problem, I'll let you know.
They're okay. They're fine. Gary Patton and Denise Holbert are leaders of that group. They're
the CAC group? They're the leaders of which group?
Save Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Alrighty.
Excuse me, just one other thing. Something that Dawn had told me a while back, so I don't know if it applies, but you had told me about the one, quote, neighborhood person who was there, was lived up on the far west side and was, you know, like.
Right.
So if that's the CAC, you could end up with really almost the developer types, so you would then, it's going to be unbalanced again in that way. I don't know how to bring it up, I'm sorry. It just seems to me that it's important that the balance, if it's going to be people who are from the community, they should be from
the
East Side.
An equal representation of the community and not one group.
That's what made me feel that.
It's always
political. And these people disenfranchised.
So who's represented on the CAC currently, who's being chosen for the new committee, and who has decided on the people coming from that?
I don't think that the CAC is currently in operation. I think it was only a 6-month group.
Passed,
yeah. And I do know that the one neighborhood representative is Deborah Elston.
Unfortunate, yes. Okie dokie. So we have the CEQA analysis, don't need it. Fiscal impact, no impact, except for the staff time it will take to do it. And this is the flow of things of how it happened and all that jazz. The other documents associated with it, none. There's no action required from the council on that one. They're just giving a report. And so we want to make any changes to it, and one of them may be to extend an invitation to the Brazos 40 Action Committee to be there because of their long-term involvement in the issue of East Side Corridor planning. Right, that just concludes that. Go.
I'm just reading this for the first moment, but one of the things I'm wondering about that we've had a few discussions at various places about having more syringe disposals in public toilets and so forth. Has that already happened? Are they available now?
No, and that will be on an item coming soon.
I'm sorry.
No, that has not happened yet, and that's going to be an item that we'll talk about before the end of the evening tonight.
Oh,
so
okay.
We'll jump
on
that in a second. Okay, so that closes item 16. Actually, so then there's the amendment for the school district, which is an election to be held March 3rd, 2020, the statewide general election in the city of Santa Cruz for a ballot measure submission proposed charter amendment, which would do district-based elections for the school district.
Okay.
No more at-large voting systems because they, quote, violates the CBRA, which I don't agree with, but
I don't agree with it either.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's,
oh, that
at least not in this community. Maybe in some communities with whole shows, but
getting lost here.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, definitely as easy to be as to get lost. Okay, so this will be a robust conversation, I guess, for the city council to have around the legitimacy of these things. I think we have to do it. I'm not sure because the school board voted to do it, but yeah, it would be consistent with the board's recent actions to conduct elections by trustee areas rather than specifying the makeup of school district board of trustees in the city charter. Doing so permits Santa Cruz City Schools District to comply with the board's adopted resolution and transition from an at-large to trustee board elections. So this is a question of fight it, not fight it. Using an opportunity to talk about the problematic nature of some of these calls for district elections, using the California Voting Rights Act as a kind of shield to what is really being done, which is trying to isolate progressive voices or limit representation on, it's funny, using it, in fact, for the opposite reason that it's intended and, in fact, limiting representation on board.
Well, one of the things that this brings to mind is that almost every time that the grand jury issues their report, when it comes to the school districts, they want all the school districts in the county to become one district instead of having, I think there's like a dozen school districts. So it's just, there's a repeat of the administration. And so all that administrative cost takes away from classroom cost. And so if there's only one administration in the entire county, then there would be more money going to the classrooms.
Is that actually how it works out in other areas?
Well, that's what they're, I mean, that's just the recommendation often from the grand jury is to get rid of this multiple replication. And you're just replicating, so you have all these little fiefdoms instead of one big fiefdom.
Fiefdom, right, that word. Dawn?
Okay, so I didn't study this. I was thinking this was a school district election for the trustees. Is that right? And so they're going to try to, given a certain geographic area, you would be voting for your trustee as your representative. Am I, that's correct? It's not about.
Voters in each district or trustee area choose their representatives who must also live in that district or trustee area.
Right. So what I know the elementary school district, Santa Cruz City Schools, that they closed down Branca Forte Elementary, and then also, you know, the one over on West Cliff. But if there's geographic areas, then maybe the Beach Flats area or the, you know, certain geographic areas may end up with better representation. I don't know, I haven't studied it, but I would like to, you know,
right,
know a little bit more about that.
The argument that I come with around that is that I, in Santa Cruz, I don't think that it's because of a desire not to have representation on the city council of Latinx people. I think that the system and the way that it's structured makes it very hard for non-independently wealthy people to be capable of running for and serving on the city council. Plus, I don't believe, to my knowledge, that the city has any robust programs actively reaching out to those communities to train individuals and prep them to want to run for city council. So to claim that the reason why we haven't had a lot of Latinx representation is because of potential racism in Santa Cruz is a valid argument, since there is aspects of racism and white supremacy in all communities within the United States. I don't know if mandating district elections is the solution, as opposed to making it so that it pays a living wage and or supports them through development programs.
But I don't know. I'm thinking that it's different between the, I don't want the district elections for the city council, but I think it might be possibly a different story with the trustees. Because, for example, a lot of the kids, like in the, let's say, just use the beach flats, they're getting bused up to De La Viega and other places. Do they really have the kind of representation that they need when their kids are going to De La Viega? Mm-hmm. Or they're going to golf school? I don't know. And so the whole idea, I mean, what I guess I'm trying to figure out is it possible that this might be a better thing for a school district, but not for the city council, let's say? That, I don't know, and I guess more will be revealed.
Well, if you have the district election, that's just one vote on the board. So even if they're representing a certain area, they have to get some of the other board members to vote with them.
Yeah.
Or they don't get what they want.
Right, I hear
you. So then there'll be a lot of horse trading. So do you really want, okay, I'll do a favor for you if you do a favor for me kind of representation?
No, but otherwise they may not have any voice, is what my point is.
Yeah, tricky system. I imagine no matter what I do, my colleagues will go on their own path. So there's that. And the question is, how big of a fight is this with regards to resisting school district elections if the school board voted on it and supported their decision?
Right.
Should probably look at the votes of the school board. The votes of the school board. So I can understand if there were anyone in dissent or that did not want to vote to support district elections.
When you first said that, I thought you were going to say, when the school board members were elected, how were the votes distributed? I mean, we don't even know if the group we're concerned about, who are much less likely to put a candidate forward, did they vote anyway? I mean, in other words, it seems to me that's a second but important question, as well as what has the school board done? Are they treating all the parts of town equally or semi-equally?
Yeah, there's a lot of variables. So I'll contact the school board and try to get the understanding of their votes and go from there, mix the bag
and
as usual.
Does Ernestina, is there someone who has some idea of how the community, particularly the Latinx community, might feel about this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are they going, the hell with it, whatever you do is what you do, or?
Or I want a voice.
Fine. Yeah.
I just want to say, I mean, as someone who is disenfranchised, being an East Sider, not having a voice on the Corridor Advisory Committee, I would have been happy if we had at least one or two voices there, even if we were outnumbered and we were able to get our point across. You don't even get a voice if you don't have a seat. So.
Right. So true. That's why I ran for council.
That's right.
Alrighty. So no real decision on that as far as what I'm going to do, but I have some threads to follow and things to weigh. Welcome to the room, Dave.
Thanks, bro.
Rocking, glad you could join us. We are on item 18 now.
Okay.
So is it page 18?
No, it's
all right.
Page 8.
Yeah, page 8, number 18. Syringe litter.
Needle mania.
Yes. So response to County of Santa Cruz syringe litter issues. This one was, of course, submitted by Myers and Matthews, so we know it's going to be lacking in certain areas, I would say.
I like the first part, but then they went on and ruined it.
You like the first
part? I like that they want to add 4 additional disposal kiosks and then determine where the locations are, but then they went on to ruin it with right. everything else they included.
So their proposal is to be open to 4 additional syringe disposal kiosks in locations to be determined by the city manager's office, which I think should be determined by the council with input from the city manager's office.
Parks and Rec has been meeting with health services. Tony's been meeting with health services.
So they should might have some say.
How does it say it's covered by the county and their contractors and installed and serviced at county expense? Is so the city wants to have nothing to do, essentially as little to do as possible.
Well, there's a ton of
Matthews and Myers want the city to have as little to do as possible. Right.
Well, except they want to be able to squash secondary exchanges.
They wouldn't announce like any further progress, like put that 4 and then halt anything else from happening ever and
right, so
make
we'll
a
go,
statement let, that we don't support it as
let's
well.
Let's go point by point. So we'll just start with the kiosks and then we'll move on to the other items. Sir.
Coonerty's letter, they're quoting from it in here. So he said Public Works and Health Services would do the installation in perpetuity. They're just repeating that. And a bunch of the paragraphs following this are completely straight from Coonerty's thing.
Okay. Thank you for that. So, 4 additional syringe disposal kiosks with locations to be determined by city manager's office, with all costs and labor for the placement and maintenance of these kiosks to be covered by the county and their contractors forever. A number of smaller, secure syringe disposal bins may also be appropriated in certain locations installed and serviced at county expense.
I'm hoping for the parks and rec, like different parks, get them in the bathroom.
Right.
So all county, though, putting the whole thing off on the county, though, right? The city has no responsibility whatsoever or accountability.
Well, the county is responsible for health and human safety issues, health and human services issues. That falls underneath the purview of the county and why they have funding for it. They just haven't done it in partnership with the city because the city has been dominated by anti-needle politics forever. And so now, finally, because I don't know if it's something they actually care about since Matthews has been on the council for the last 20 years and could have done this 20 years ago, whether they're doing this to try to appear somewhat compassionate to the issue of substance use disorder. So the kiosks, they should be decided by the city council with recommendation of the staff in collaboration with Parks and Rec and the PR commission. There should be more than 4.
I would think so.
I think so.
At this point, that's what the cap. They said they have some extras in storage. We can do this super quick. Mm-hmm. So that might be their 4 number.
Can there be, or should there be, or what?
Start with 4 and then continue to collect data on where more should be placed?
Data collection. Okay, what is.
Look at what they did before. I mean, they had.
We're going to go with Don because she had her hand up waited, and then we'll go to Robert.
So I heard, being on the commission, that some of the Parks and Rec staff were very upset because the needles get into the toilets and mess up the lines and blah, blah, blah. So doesn't it make sense to keep, some kind of a receptacle bin in the toilets for the parks, restrooms? And so, and that then you don't have to close down the bathrooms because they're all messed up and you have to redo the plumbing because you have a receptacle right there in the bathroom. And when I was in, I took a picture of it, I was in Eugene, and in the airport they have a receptacle for needles. And so this is just something we need to do.
You can also say it doesn't just affect those.
And also the diabetics and all that. Yes.
Right, we'll go with Robert, then you want to say something?
Oh no, that's
okay, funny. Robert, and then Scott, and then Serge.
So what you were saying, Scott, is true, they used to have needle disposal, sharps containers, and cloud house. Do you know of other bathrooms where they used to have them as well?
Is they used to. Well, Robert, I can't quite
every
read.
Part bathroom.
And so these
and
are
the reason they took them out was they thought that that was giving the needle users a place to use their needles.
Well, my point would be that you want to find out the cost of doing that, the cost and expense of doing this in the past, get some sort of report of the fact that it was done before. And because, I mean, insofar as you're saying the county needs to deal with it, it's a county health thing, which is the constant refrain of the conservative minority or majority on this council. It's not always been the county. It's been the city in the past that dealt with this particular issue. So find out how much it costs, where they were, and, you know, also expose why they were removed and talk about those issues, too, which has to do with, yes, needle mania and what exactly what John was saying, which is that it's ridiculous and counterproductive to public health and safety. So enough said about it.
Thank you. Scott?
Yeah, it was because of Take Back Santa Cruz that they were removed from the restrooms. As you know, they, along with them closing down the needle exchange, they also got the receptacles taken out of all the park's restrooms because they were, that's promoting the use of hydrodermic. You know, so if you have it in there and the people that are the junkies think that that's the place to go to shoot up.
Sorry, what's the history of Sharps containers in the bathrooms in the city? What's the timeline? What was the cause of them being removed? What about receptacles in city park stalls to stop needles and toilets? What about data collection?
Costs
to support.
And then the other thing is
increased installation of additional kiosks.
The other thing is that one of the reasons that there is needle litter is because once a needle has been used, it's considered paraphernalia.
You were saying that, and the police chief was sitting next to me shaking his head, and I think that they changed that that thing, but I will check.
No, they haven't. I know people that have been arrested. Even they had Sharps containers with their used needles in it, and they still got arrested. So if they've changed it, it hasn't bled down to the street level cop yet.
Well, if somebody's on probation, you can't have to use something.
Be sure to put into that question, even if they're in a Sharps container.
Depends what's in there, but probation is a different thing about what you can have on you.
Well, again, with the Sharps container, I don't know how San Francisco's doing it, but I would look into, like, San Francisco has a large substance abuse problem. Do they have Sharps containers in their bathrooms?
Pizza My Heart has a super steel one in there. The issue is people tearing them off, too. But it's also a public health thing for workers picking them up. Dude shoots up with heroin. He's not paying attention to his needle. But please don't put that in the trash can because somebody's got to be picking up these bags. Don't put it in the toilet because it's stuffing it up.
Well,
so it sits on the floor. Parks and Rec says, look, needle's on the floor.
It looks like you can hire them on your own, and it looks like they recommend them. Doctors, hospitals, funeral homes, tattoo parlors, blood banks, research laboratories, veterinarians, and retail clinics. These are all places they're recommending putting them if you use this private company to supply the container for you.
Well, we send you that.
I got HBH to give me some containers, and I had them put up in Salvation Army for winter shelter, and they even took care of the clearing them out thing.
Okay.
It's all doable. It's just that thing about people assuming people use because this containers are there.
Right, and that brings us to the next point. Okay. In addition, direct the mayor to advise the county that first point is that no, quote, safe injection, end quote, sites within the city of Santa Cruz should be established.
I would strike that.
I would argue that because, one, they can't put anything in city limits that you don't decide. But she's saying that without any best practice study, without any backup to it, purely.
Is that just opinion?
It's just
personal
bias.
Opinion?
You know, one thing, a few years ago, there was an effort, as you guys probably know better than I do, to put a safe injection site in one of the places that was talked about was Emmeline. And there were some others. Oh, the neighbors don't want people coming up.
Well,
and
it's
so
mostly
forth.
McPherson.
But,
and
so there was, I mean, thank you, next door. That there was huge, that's how I knew about it, because everybody was complaining. So this may be, in fact, the political, they're still at that, as opposed to looking at data and how much it really improves.
Well, they definitely are because of the next couple bullet points. But so with safe injection sites, I also share that perspective that it is a ridiculous direction and statement to make, since safe injection sites have data-driven points that show that they not only help people to transition off of substance use, but also
save lives. Yeah, the number of overdoses we had would be a factor.
Absolutely, Robert, and then
can you actually
but Coonerty doesn't want it.
That the staff look into safe injection sites in other cities, because you need some data.
And do a presentation on the data.
Not just say where is the data, but do let's say that for sure, but also direction of the staff to look into it. But ideas and deal, let's look into it.
Well, turn it around. The only city is San Francisco because it's illegal. And they said we're doing it anyway.
Right.
They said that last
time. Vancouver. I'm looking at Vancouver. This proposed legislatively. But
or even if we're not going to look forward to placing them, at least let's not write something that says we'll never put them, you know, consider
right. Well, that's,
at
that's
least let's remove
point.
That.
That's my point. Let's
it's
not
nothing
just
else.
Say never.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Let me just combine these so I can keep them separate as points. Okay. Next, we move on to no additional syringe exchange sites, including mobile exchange in the city of Santa Cruz, should be established without prior city council approval.
So that one is the harm reduction with Denise.
Yeah.
She applied to the state.
That's a
and
personal
the state
job.
Says the cities and counties can't decide this because it's best practice.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply straight to the state.
Right.
It's against the law to say that.
Right, so let's
it's a personal job, too, I feel like.
You can apply to the state, specifically because it's best practice.
And even if it isn't against the law, is it a good idea? No.
So these are questions. I take these and then I format them for the appropriate staff members and then I send them out to get.
Also, again, I would ask if that is data driven or opinion.
It's and more Take Back Santa Cruz opinion.
And this one is connected to number three, which is city does not support secondary syringe exchange. This one, the health services, so Coonerty writes his letter and said, look, health services wrote a report and we talked about their recommendations. Their recommendations were you should have secondary syringe exchange like spots. That's best practice.
So like, why are you going against recommendations?
And then the Board of Supervisors said, I don't care, we're not doing it, we're gonna continue doing our county thing with very limited hours.
Right, they cut the hours in half. Eh?
Yeah, but in that whole Denise applying for harm reduction and the city saying it's unsafe, even Jason Hoppen, the county media rep, he said, it is best practice.
I mean, yeah, have the staff look into best practices use of secondary syringe exchange. It's very neutral. No.
There is no connection with secondary syringe exchanges and more needles on the ground.
So
no study that says
that. In other words, have the staff verify that and then have it come back.
Point it out.
Then it becomes evidence for change policy.
Their name put on the side of every syringe. So that when they pick them up off the ground, they say, yes, these came from Denise.
Yeah, well,
I don't know how she would
some
feel
of the city council.
The name of the group.
That's a little personal.
Yeah, well, still, that's.
The police chief, a couple city council, a couple board of supervisors, they all wrote letters to the city.
I know.
To the state.
I know.
Like, in completely not caring about best
I've
practices.
I've never heard through. I mean, I know what we'll talk
about. Yeah, super painful.
Point of information, what is the difference between a,
secondary.
Let's see, a syringe exchange sites, including mobile exchanges, and secondary syringe exchange? I just don't know. Are they different?
No, there's no difference. What the whole thing is the government, the county health services has an exchange. So a secondary exchange would be an exchange happening this done by the public, not the health department.
Right, where they like,
and so a mobile exchange would be still part of that secondary exchange.
The one for one is when a person has to show up themselves with a needle and exchange it. Usually it's like one for one.
Yeah.
A mobile service is where they come out like to like say camps and you can bring, it's not necessarily one for one either. They might bring you a bag and then you exchange. And then like say somebody can grab them for their friend if they need to. I mean, it's just like a good practice to give them what they need rather than forcing the one for one, because that's
okay.
People so are
there,
using
there
dirty
really
needles.
Is a difference that makes, yeah. Okay, but, I just really didn't know.
Yeah, and yeah. Specifically with the amount of needles that people are doing, they're not doing one, they're weighing it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's a bag and nobody really wants to touch it.
Right. It's like, give me this bag, here's a new bag.
So you could put all the things that we don't have recycling for, you could put in the middle of the bag and get a lot.
Yeah. The police chief, when he wrote his letter to the state, he said, hey, if we made it a nickel per needle, then people would do it. But you can't weigh it. There's liquid in it sometimes. Like,
that's horrible.
Nobody's going to count them. Nobody's doing that.
Talk about an environmental health hazard. He doesn't think things through.
Interesting. Like, people would bring them
back.
It seemed
to be simple enough for someone to make a little machine. You dump the needles in, and then it shakes them, and they count.
Yeah, right. People say that they, since they don't open up the Sharps containers, that they, you know, the anti-needle exchange people are like, they just put rocks in there to make it heavier, and then they get more needles, and they throw needles in the ground and put rocks in. And it's like, what? All right, well, you don't know because they don't open it, so how do you know that is the case?
That doesn't even make any sense, really.
Right, so then the last two is the city doesn't support the secondary syringe exchange, which is foolish, and then the fourth one is, or fifth one, I guess, the county should establish a 24/7 needle response program.
Yeah, because right now people call the police to come pick up a needle. Mm-hmm. And the police chief actually wants more needles out there, clean needles from whatever, harm reduction, or whatever, because almost every cop at some point gets poked by a needle. And they don't want the Hep C and all those things that they're afraid of and stuff, so they're like, hey, clean needles available to people.
And the more we have of clean needle distribution, even if they were to get poked, the chances of being a non-contaminated needle
and the
are
more,
a lot better.
Yeah, and the more needles out there, people aren't having to share needles because it was hard to get a clean needle.
Exactly.
So, that's
and I can share just a personal story. Eric and I have talked about this, actually, because my partner is a former drug user. He's been clean for almost 10 years. He told me that back in the day when there was a hard time finding what you need here and the needles, he had to break into Sharps containers and pull old needles out. And he doesn't mind me sharing the story because he wants people to know how severe it can get. And actually, he had to take a series of medication because he did get Hep C from that. He had to take like a $90,000 treatment, and all this could have been avoided. So, just that's a personal story. Yeah. It's if you don't have access, you will do some crazy things and put yourself even at risk to get those things. It's very important that we have clean needles available to people.
And the county should care because they're going to pay the health bill for all those people who are infected. And the city doesn't care.
And I know that's shocking. I know that's a shocking story
shocked.
To share. I was actually shocked when he told me, but it's important that people know that, actually.
What is a little response?
And that's what happens when we don't have, you know, clear policy. People do desperate things.
What kind of staff report justification do they give for this?
There's a sentence. In secondary exchanges, the injection drug users are robbed of the opportunity to connect with trained professionals. They just make that shit up.
Between July 1st, 2018 and May 15, 2019, the downtown street team picked up nearly 6,000 syringes in 2018. Yeah, I don't know. I turned it off.
Trained professionals. Diabetics don't get a trained professional when they go buy them from Walgreens.
Yes.
So are we going to be able to go over time? Because this is really important.
No, remember I said that I'm not going to talk about that tonight, and if you'd like to meet with me about that, we can set up a time to talk about it if you'd like to, because there's way too much to talk about in this. I have a staff or a team member with Project Palm that's expecting me at 7 and all that. No problem. But if you're interested in talking about it, I am more than happy to. Like I said, I've constructed an approach to begin going at it, but I'm always interested in other things, and I know you've been diligently pouring over the report, Lee, so I would like to schedule a time to meet with you so that we can talk more in depth about your takeaways and some of your...
Kind of the, I have little tabs in here.
Yeah, I also have one that I let Jane have. It has all these little color tabs and everything, which is great. Okay, so this is the thing. They found 6,000 syringes in 2018. The parks collected 4,100 needles.
In 3 months of 2019, Parks collected another 795 needles. Syringe litter is a problem.
How many were seeded by Take Back Santa Cruz?
The Santa Cruz County Syringe Service Program has been in operation for over 6 years. But it's broken. Doesn't say that, but it should.
And the report doesn't talk about like what was happening before those 6 years and the limitations of the services at that 6 year mark.
From March, for 2 years, it was 5,600 pounds of syringes, approximately 1 million syringes, and they use these numbers to freak people out, right?
I'd like to make the point that I made in a letter to the editor, and I think somehow needs to be worked into this. If you're an IV drug user who owns a home or rents, you're not going to put your used needles in the trash with your mail, with your address on it. You're going to go out, you're going to drop it in a park, or go to the bathroom and leave it in the trash. And all of these do-good, take-back people who aren't Ohlone Indians are going to blame it on the homeless. They're going to say the home, all of these needles are coming from the homeless. That's why we got to get rid of the homeless. It's really important to tie needle use to people who are respected.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
Well, I just want to say is, you know, if you ever go to the needle exchange now that happens with Denise on Sunday nights, there's people that pull up in Mercedes-Benz, Jaguars, all sorts of very expensive cars to get needles.
Interesting.
I've seen some stuff in the parking lots over there. I won't even say. I've seen some crazy stuff in this town by people that you wouldn't think. And they have houses.
Yeah. I mean, going to county services, everyone sees you going up and getting needles. Like, people, they don't want that.
That's got to be said out loud, even if it's just totally out of context of the conversation.
So if anybody wants to hear this, you can hear it. It'll be posted probably on Sunday, if you want to review what's been said here. I think a lot of important
Robert, things. I can't hear. What are you
A lot of important things have been said here. It's been recorded. It'll be posted online for people to hear.
Great. Well, I'm just finishing this last little note that I'm making here, and then I'm headed out right now. So thank you all, everyone, for coming.
Folks, we're not going to the big item on the agenda.
No, I meant that not from the beginning. I knew we weren't going to have time to address such a big issue. So if people are interested in meeting with me to talk about that outside of this meeting, then I'm happy to do that. Specifically, want to schedule something with Lee to talk about some stuff.
I'm going to send you what I proposed to say in oral communication because it's from the Rose Report about you, and I want to make sure that that's okay with you. Mm-hmm. And then get back to me. I'm going to be at plenary tomorrow. Are you coming?
Plenary?
Plenary meeting.
I don't know what it is.
Us.
Oh.
10:30 to what? 12 or 12:30.
I will try to make it. I may have to be up in. I may have to leave the community at December early in the morning and come back before 11 because I have to do a mailing party at the resource center. So I definitely have to be at the resource center at 11. Either way.
I work, but I'm generally back here by 1 or 2. Okay. And we've only got a